Hi, I'm Ashley Mills, the CEO of the Vision Council, and I am absolutely thrilled to be here on IdeaGen TV today, talking with global leaders from across all different sectors and industries about how our work is making real impact, especially against the Sustainable Development Goals for 2030. As I mentioned, I'm with the Vision Council. We represent the vision industry and the retailers who sell optical products as well as manufacture them. Vision is such a critical issue, and I can share with you why. Earlier this year, we had a huge victory at the United Nations where all of the world's governments joined on and agreed in a resolution that vision is a catalyst to achieving many, if not most, of the Sustainable Development Goals. We were thrilled with that progress and want to use this time today to talk not just about the global level picture of recognition of vision as a really a silver bullet that can solve so many problems, but also vision as a solvable problem at the more local level, and maybe even get a chance to talk about how we might all be more impactful together using vision as a priority. So today I am thrilled to be joined by a friend and colleague, Palin Muniz, PhD. She runs Restoring Vision and will be able to tell you about the absolutely tremendous impact that just putting a pair of reading glasses on a person's face can have on their lives, specifically around the goals of decent work and gender equity and eradicating poverty. So I am thrilled to introduce my friend, Palin, and also give you a chance to talk to us about Restoring Vision and the work that you do.
Thank you so much, Ashley. Thank you for having me here. I'm very excited for our conversation and to be talking about this incredibly important topic. I like how you framed it as the silver bullet that really can be the impetus to solve many global issues that we're navigating all together. So it's great to be here. As you mentioned, I'm the executive director at Restoring Vision. Our organization is a global nonprofit organization dedicated to addressing the unmet need for eyeglasses for people living in impoverished communities around the world. We reach those individuals who don't have access to eyeglasses, lack the ability to afford a pair, and oftentimes both. In our 18-year history, we've really grown to become the leader in this area of creating equitable access to glasses for people living in poverty, and particularly for individuals that are living on less than $2 a day. Our programs focus primarily on the provision of vision screenings and reading glasses to address presbyopia, which is very prominent, and then also to implement the provision of minus glasses to address myopia. We're, making great strides in this area, but we have quite a ways to go as well. So if I could just maybe share a little bit more about what we do to kind of give you and your audience a little bit more information on our programming. We've been implementing our programs in about 136 countries and in partnership with more than 2,300 NGOs and more recently with government social service agencies. We're incredibly proud to have brought vision health and also the eyeglasses delivery programs to that many organizations who today partner with us to bring vision to millions of people in need. We've had really tremendous progress in our 18-year history. We've reached over 19 million people. However, we're really just beginning to scratch the surface of this global issue. Ashley, as you know, and for those who don't know, today there's over a billion people who don't have access to vision care and the glasses they need to be able to see clearly, and hence they live with vision impairment and its consequences. So this is really an astounding problem. And however, it's one that the solution is available and also scalable. So it's really an exciting time to be talking about this, and many thanks to the great work that people have done in bringing vision to the forefront so more people are aware and can become involved.
I think that's really exciting, and it's a tremendous amount of impact that you just outlined. I'm curious, which countries you're most active in?
So our vision programs have been implemented in about 136 countries. As I mentioned, we have the strongest presence in regions such as Latin America. We've, over the past few years, have been also increasing our footprint in Africa and Southeast Asia. We work in, you know, up to about 100 countries a year. So we're quite dispersed in our impact. In 2015, we started what we call our Global Access Program, which today reaches about 2 million people annually. However, that program could scale to reach 10 million people if we had the funding to support it. In 2019, we began to really improve and increase our impact in specific countries. So we've been investing and building out our programming in countries such as Mexico, Peru, Nigeria, and more recently, India. And our intent in doing that is to really begin to work deeper in a country so that we can begin to lay out the roadmap for what solving this issue area in a particular country might look like.
So how have you found a model for how you best partner with governments, I guess national governments and then local governments, to make sure that you can get on the ground and reach the people in need?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, governments play such a critical role in this area. When Restoring Vision first started, we really focused our partnerships in collaborating with our in-country NGO partners. However, as we grew, we recognized that the work really needed to be done in collaboration with government agencies, local leaders, et cetera. And so that's been a big focus for us. Currently through the Global Access Program, we continue to partner with NGOs, but also government entities to implement the vision programs. Some of our programs are linked to government social service or Ministry of Health agencies. And then some are also implemented through community-based or education organizations that have a public-private partnership in place. I think that, you know, to really support the long-term access and the sustainability to bring basic vision services and also glasses for the people we serve, government intervention is just essential. You know, ministries of health really can and need to include eye health as a top priority in primary healthcare. But in addition, in the work that we do, and particularly our focus on addressing presbyopia, that's where it gets really interesting because you can implement it in programs outside of health and working with ministries of health specifically. You can incorporate it into organizations and departments that are focusing on education, on labor, on supporting the aging population, which we know is growing around the world. And so it can really be embedded in many parts of government, as well as at the local and community levels.
So that's interesting. Do you have, how do you build your infrastructure when you're translating this from the government acknowledging that this is important? How do you build your infrastructure locally?
So it always starts off with partnerships. And I think this is what Itagen and also the UN and also Vision Council really supports, is the impact of partnerships. So all of our programs and projects are operated in collaboration with partners. Sometimes it's one partner, sometimes it's multiple partners on the ground. And really what we do is leverage their knowledge of the communities to be able to figure out what's the best way to reach the target population that we're trying to impact. And in our case, oftentimes there's multiple approaches to doing that. So for example, in our work in Mexico, we reach our beneficiaries through a number of avenues. Sometimes it's through the health clinics that are ongoing within these communities. Sometimes they occur at pop-up health clinics that occur when there's a health issue that needs to be addressed in particular, and it's we add glasses and vision programming to that work. In other cases, it's through mobile clinics. And sometimes it's through door-to-door servicing and community healthcare workers. So there's, you know, a number of ways in which these programs can be implemented. And we found that by partnering with the organizations on the ground, with the government, and being flexible to the approach has really led to a lot of success for us.
That's, I think, incredibly important, is that flexibility and ability to work with different situations and really retrofit your work into the into the opportunities that are already on the ground. I wonder
really, and you know, that's been more so the case since the pandemic hit. I think when the pandemic reached many of these countries, everybody had to be flexible in order to ensure that services and delivery of care could be administered at the levels that we've been able to do it at.
I've often said that you know, the pandemic has really taken all of the share of voice from all of the other healthcare issues. And it's really been monopolizing the conversation. Has that hurt your efforts in any way?
Actually, it's been quite the opposite for us. When the pandemic reached the States and then globally, we weren't sure what was going to happen with our work. Oftentimes in situations of disaster and relief and aid, vision is prioritized last. It's definitely not tier one. It's often not tier two. And by the time it gets to tier three, a lot of the activities have been completed. However, that wasn't the case with the COVID pandemic. And in fact, what happened is our projects actually got prioritized. They were, again, probably because our projects are embedded within larger global health issues and also public and social service agency issues, that we didn't experience being deprioritized. Instead, we saw our programming grow. Today, we have kind of the opposite problem that most nonprofits don't have. So a lot of nonprofits will raise dollars to really grow their programming. For us, our program capacity and pipeline has grown significantly because of the pandemic to where we could reach significantly more people if we had the funding to support it. And that was really exciting because, again, I think our projects in country have really recognized the importance of vision and the role that it plays in overall not only health, but also productivity. I think it's more important now than ever to ensure that people have the tools that they need so that they can stay employed, that they can be productive, they can be independent, and glasses are an avenue to achieving all of that.
I wanted to ask you more about that. And you've really just said it beautifully, but while vision health and access to vision health is the solution, that access to vision care creates a solution and a ripple effect in other areas. And you just mentioned employability. Do you have a favorite example or two of the impact it's made on people to be in contact with restoring vision and have a pair of glasses?
Absolutely. I mean, there's incredible stories that we hear all the time from the field. And for example, we started a partnership focused on serving community members and accessing those individuals through public school systems in Nigeria. And what we found there is that a lot of the teachers were living with vision impairment themselves, and it was a barrier to them being able to educate the children and the students. And so we started partnering to provide them the glasses that they needed. We also provided glasses to the parents so that they can support their children's education, and as well to the community members. We know that in a lot of these areas and locations, the community plays such a critical role in helping to raise the younger generations. And so to ensure that they have what they need to be able to support them has just been really powerful. And it's been extraordinary to watch all of this unfold and to grow because we know that so many people don't have access to glasses the way that we do here in the United States, for example.
So I'm glad you mentioned the United States because mm-hmm. we've been working really hard at the Vision Council level, the federal government level in the US to try to gain some traction on including and expanding vision care benefits, including low vision, which vision care, especially in an aging population, and low vision benefits, that's the difference between being able to work and live an independent life or not. And it's critical. We unfortunately haven't yet made that case strongly enough. I don't think that we will make it into Build Back Better at this time, but we're still hopeful that with the validation of the United States government and the ambassador at the United Nations level, that this is really important. We're really hopeful that we can get some traction with the US government. And I'm thrilled to hear that you have traction with so many governments and countries around the world. So I think it's a great example And also it gives me great hope at the very least. So we talked about this, but just to reiterate for everyone, we're talking with, you know, global leaders from all different sectors, all different countries, all different mm-hmm. companies. And I guess I would just like to reiterate that this is 1.2 billion people in the world don't have access to vision care. And think about if we could improve the economic status, we could pull 1.2 billion people out of poverty. We could get them working. We could ensure that they are able to learn to read in school. So mm-hmm. I think that the power is there. And it sounds like if we are able to scale and we could have that kind of collective impact. So I can say that from the Vision Council side, I think my members stand ready to make the glasses if we can get get into every country and get some government partnerships to help us get the glasses to people who need them.
And that's the beauty of this area. We're not creating a new intervention. We're not creating a new tool. It already exists, and it's really just a matter of figuring out the roadmap to how we can create access for all the individuals that don't have access, and also how we can generate more funding into the sector. I think that we have been saying that the sector is severely underfunded, and with more support, we can really make significant progress. At Restoring Vision, you know, we look at eye health comprehensively. But we also think that just based on our own research, that perhaps we need to tease apart different aspects of it. So for the area where Restoring Vision has the most impact, which is in addressing presbyopia and the provision of non-prescription reading glasses, you can solve that problem rather quickly if you have kind of the right components in place. And then it's going to take a little more time to build out the comprehensive eye health solutions, from, you know, comprehensive exams to the provision of prescription glasses, and then also to implement surgeries for various eye diseases that also are prevalent around the world. So we think that maybe by teasing it apart, we can tackle different components of it. The presbyopia component, it impacts everybody. Everybody experiences presbyopia at some point in their lifetime, and a simple pair of reading glasses is a solution, and you don't need medical professionals to be able to do that, as we've seen here in the US. And so to kind of leverage that knowledge and help build that infrastructure in many countries would really help to advance our work there.
I think that's an incredible strategy also. And I think that it would help bring different partners to the table, knowing that you're focused on all mm-hmm. of the different factors of vision health and vision correction. So that's really, I think, really important. I just wanted to ask, you know, we have an audience with the IdeaGen TV group mm-hmm. that is very far reaching. And I just wanted to ask if there's anything that you would want to leave them with or ask before we wrap up.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the world changes with bold ideas. And I think that's where this conversation gets really exciting. Our bold idea is just like you, Ashley, right? We believe that we can solve the vision crisis. It is solvable, and those of us that are working in the sector know that. And so we ask ourselves, what does the world look like when everybody who needs glasses has them? And I think that that's incredibly exciting, and it's just a great vision and a dream for us to be having. I think for the global leaders that you reach and that are, you know, throughout the world, we would ask them to do what they've done with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. They've really embraced those goals. They've made it a part of their day-to-day, their strategic plans, and to really consider adding the resolution on vision, so vision health for everyone by 2030, to also embrace that and include that into their strategies and their plans. I think there's a significant opportunity if we have more collaborating on this problem to be able to solve it. We think that when we solve this issue area, as we've been talking about, it's a ripple effect to solve so many other issue areas. And we know at Restoring Vision, intimately the role that eye health plays and the ability to see has in advancing those issue areas. And so for the global leaders, we would say, embrace this, add this to the work that you're doing. The UN has obviously recognized it for a reason, and hence the global community should as well. And I think for, you know, the individual who requires glasses in order to be able to read in order to help teach their children, or the person who requires glasses because they need to be able to sort their crops, or they need to thread their needles, they can be able to do this. And all of that leads to not only increased productivity, but it also impacts the mental health and the well-being of these individuals. And so if we have healthy, productive individuals, then we have healthy, productive communities and society, and then hence the global community at large. So I would just really encourage your audience and global leaders around the world to really embrace vision and to see that the importance of vision and really bring it to the forefront of their work.
I couldn't agree more. I'm really thrilled. I'll go back one more time to sure. the UN resolution, and the words are vision is a catalyst. And while we're staring down 2022, we're getting very close to 2030. And if we needed to move fast, which we do, to hit these goals, we need a catalyst. And I thank you for explaining to us how vision can be that catalyst to impact so many of the goals and really get us there fast. So I'm looking forward to working with you more on this, of course, and I'm really grateful for the work that Restoring Vision does.
Thank you, Ashley, and to you and to all of those individuals and organizations that really helped to launch that UN resolution, and to the ambassadors that made that work possible. I think it's really an extraordinary step forward. And you're absolutely right. 2030 is around the corner, and it's going to come really fast. However, I do think that sort of what has sort of unraveled and unrolled and really become prominent during the pandemic has forced us to be better in what we're doing, and it's really forced us to take those steps and leaps forward. So I have full confidence that we will get there together, and really appreciate you raising this issue and continuing to be a champion of this issue area, because I think it deserves a lot more visibility, and that's how we're going to get more people involved in being a part of the solution.
I agree. Well said. So I'd like to just thank IdeaGen for the opportunity for us to talk about this issue, and then welcome anyone watching to reach out to me or Palin and figure out how we might be able to solve one of your problems. I think that I think we can, and I would love a chance to work with others to bring vision to the forefront and take care of so many other things in the process. So thank you all.
Thank you.